I want to apologize for my tardiness. Final St. Patrick's event of the season. I'm very honored to have just been with the Vice President at his house and the Irish delegation. And so I thank you for your patience. Today is March 20th, 2013. This is a meeting of the Board of Public Works. I understand Jay Newcomb is here, President of Dorchester County Council. Is the President here? Mr. President, how are you, sir? Good. And he is here on Secretary's Agenda Item 6. So why don't we call Secretary's Agenda?
Could we wait for the Treasurer? Is she here? Please.
Here she is. Good. How was it?
How are you?
Good. So, Secretary's Agenda. Mr. Franchot, I apologize.
Thank you. I was actually, Governor, going to defer the opening statement because of the late start we're getting, but I love Louis Goldstein, so I'm going to say a few words because last week, Thursday, March 14th, would have been Comptroller Goldstein's 100th birthday. And I just want to say to Marilyn that I continue to be humbled every day to go to work in the building that rightfully bears his name, in the office that he held for over four decades, look out the window at his statue. Sitting next to me, Jerry Klassmeyer, who worked very closely with Louis, and there are probably other people in the room that worked for Louis. His name still invokes smiles, warm recollections, and due reverence nearly 15 years after his passing. Continues to be a profound thrill to follow in his legendary steps. Yes, he was famous for those gold coins. I'm trying to think about how to do that myself. But it was just a unique personality. And his favorite saying, God bless you all real good, personally answering the phone, 7:30 in the morning, every day at his office, just made him a timeless and beloved Maryland icon. But voters did not overwhelmingly vote for Louis 10 times to serve as their comptroller simply because he was a charming and likable politician. They supported him because he was a fiercely independent steward of the taxpayer money, a man who set a standard for honorable public service, a standard we all try to emulate. He built an agency that has as its slogan, serving the people. So in celebrating his centennial, I remain deeply honored to follow in his legendary footsteps, building off his legacy of renowned taxpayer service. An underappreciated aspect of Louis Goldstein's tenure was the cutting-edge technological advances made under his leadership. As the first state in the country to employ computerized tax collection, think about that, first state in the country to employ computerized tax collection. And prior to his death, the agency began plans to allow electronic filing of tax returns. I'm proud to continue and build upon that legacy. We're now on pace to exceed 75% of all tax returns are now being filed electronically. Think of that. Think of all the trees we save, paper we're not using. And think about the security and efficiency we give taxpayers. With Louis in mind, I wanted to let everyone know I'll be hosting an online chat tomorrow from 2 to 3 p.m. to answer last-minute tax questions as we approach the April 15th deadline. That chat can be accessed through our website, MarylandTaxes.com. I'd also like to point out that taxpayers can visit any of our 12 field offices throughout the state, and a member of my staff will help you file your Maryland taxes free of charge, regardless of your income or status or place and wherever it is. We are absolutely open door, open access, guaranteed it'll be right. We look forward to continuing to provide Marylanders with the cutting-edge, legendary taxpayer service that defined Louis' life and career. I understand his daughter's here with us, and please give my regards to the other members of your family and tell them that your dad is alive and well, and we honor him every day. Thank you, Governor.
Sure, thank you. Very good man. Okay, Secretary's Agenda. Can we take item six first?
Good morning,
Department of Business and Economic Development. We've got an inclusive job to Dorchester County Technology Park. Item 6, we have 12 items on the agenda this morning. One emergency report. One report of emergency procurement. Would you like to introduce yourself and the project and then...
Good morning. Thank you. I'm Greg Cole with the Office of Finance Programs within the Department of Business and Economic Development. And in keeping with Comptroller Francio's technology, that's exactly what we're doing here today. This is to develop the first technology incubator on the Eastern Shore in the Technology Park in Dorchester County. We're asking to repurpose $1,263,500, which is the remainder of $1,750,000 that the Board of Public Works had approved for this project in 2004. The reason we're here today is we have a difference in purpose. In 2004, the money was intended to buy the property. Since then, a lot of things have occurred in the long development of the park. The county, as its participation in the project, stepped up and purchased the property. Therefore, it was not necessary for the state to purchase the dirt, so to speak. So, but as a part of this project, if I could call it phase two, after we developed the park to attract technology companies, we needed to build an incubator to incubate those technology companies. That's what this phase two is. So in addition to the $8.7 million development of the park, we're now building a $2.3 million technology incubator. And what we simply want to do is take the money that we would have used on the land and instead of dirt, buy bricks. This is being matched through other sources, including the county, who is putting up $500,000 in operating funds for this incubator to successfully operate it over the next 5 years. So it is not net new money. It's simply repurposing old money for a different reason and actually, for the state's purposes, getting greater value. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Good. Mr. Comptroller?
Yes. Thank you. I'm supportive of this. I think it's a great project. For Dorchester, Cambridge area, et cetera. I would like you, if you would, since you're here, take back a message, which is I hope people in Dorchester reexamine the public charter school proposal that has been put forward down in Cambridge and Dorchester by William Ackridge. It's a STEM program, this public charter school, focused on science, technology, engineering, and math. That proposal that was submitted to the Dorchester, I don't know what it was, school board or something down there, is described by experts to me as the finest public charter proposal in the country. It has the backing of the Ackridge family, one of the most generous philanthropic families in the state. And apparently it's just been rejected, and I'm not quite sure what is going on down there with the leadership, but I hope that you would ask them to take this proposal back up and understand that it's a very significant complementary idea that really merges with the proposal that you have today. And it is, as far as I can tell, hopelessly ensnarled in the local education bureaucracy. So please, try to dynamite it out.
You have my
because it's a great proposal, and just anyone that looks at it understands the A++ first-rate quality.
I will do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. President, anything you want to say on this?
Well, sir, it's, we've done the school technology back to the school board. We built a new school technology thanks to you all's help with that, $30 million. It's full to capacity, so this
great.
Is our
when
next
did that
step.
Open?
Excuse me?
When did that open?
Was this the second year?
That's awesome. Kids psyched about it?
Yes. Beautiful, high-tech school. Everybody comes and looks at it. And it's the next step to this tech part.
We hope and it's countywide.
Yes, sir. It's for the whole
county. So
south, north, Dorchester, all the kids are bused come into that school. Yes, sir.
So is this the next generation of CTE? So kids are going to be able to, the students there will have
a lot of them get credit when they move out, yes, sir, into nursing and tech school. And, I mean, it's very good. I'd say it's full to capacity.
I can't wait to come down and see it. As soon as the session's over, since they let me out.
Anybody that you can. Come down and have a good crab cake.
Yeah,
but on the shores of this, our tech park is the next stage of this. After we've got this school technology, now we want to move on with the incubator. We've hired an incubator manager to get this building up, and we're hopefully then we can get this tech park. And we need jobs in Dorchester, so we're at your mercy to try to keep this money to get this building up and expand this tech park.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
If I could just add what I said to the previous gentleman, and he could.
We
dress it up and make it sound a little more polite, less
school
adversarial.
Board, we met with our local school board last night over test grades and all. Last night we had probably an hour discussion. But when I get back, I will hold a council, and we will send a letter to the school board. They're elected. We'll send it to you. Make sure your comments.
No, you don't.
We'll say your comments are related back to them.
Please, because this is a quality project, and it really
He made a presentation to us, and we said, well, it's up to the school board. They went to the school board, and they voted it down. But we will certainly...
Thank you.
Pass your message on, sir.
Isn't Cambridge International a great company down your area?
Yes, sir.
And don't they employ some of the kids from the program?
Yes, sure do.
Yeah, no, that's a really exciting employment opportunity.
Yes, sir.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir. We thank you for all your visits and all you all do for us.
Thank you.
Could I just add, getting back for a second to the agenda, how impressed I am by the county taking the initiative and moving quickly to get this property for the tech park to tie it down, as well as having it so close to the next generation supply of technology experts. But you don't always see the local governments moving that quickly to assure something, and I just thank you.
Yeah, I was on the board originally when they purchased the land. It's been an ongoing project. You know, we had infrastructure, get water, sewer, heavy annex. We got fiber optic right across the street from our airport. So we hope everything's in the right place. We just want to go to the next step.
And that fiber optic was part of the build-out from the Obama administration, covering Reinvestment Act, right?
Yes, sir.
That's what it's all about, right?
And it's all right there to the tech park. It's all ready to go.
Connecting businesses and young people to the opportunities. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
Well, I look forward to going down, seeing Mesa's Landing, seeing all the schools and the tech park, which I think is particularly good.
I think you'd be very impressed with that facility.
Great. All right. Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. It's unanimous. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Come
Thank
see
you. Thank you. All right. The balance of the secretary's agenda. Questions?
Somebody who has requested to speak in opposition to the wetlands license in item 5. And we'd like to use the wetlands administrator first to explain his license, and Mr. Manning can come up after that. Early morning, want to introduce yourself and the background of this license.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer. And Mr. Comptroller, for the record, I'm Dolan Moore, Wetlands Administrator to the Board of Public Works. And before you today is Wetlands License 120224. Timothy Beckwith is the applicant. And we do have a few four pictures to kind of orient you to the project site. Okay, this first picture, St. Mary's County. On the upper right is Leonardtown. On the bottom part of the picture is the Potomac River. And Breton Bay is running through the center of the slide. And Protestant Point is the project site.
Protestant Point, I guess that tells us who was in the neighborhood first.
Yeah, on this slide, Kevin, it should be the other, the boundary slide, property boundary slide, that shows all the owners.
Are you stuck, Kevin?
Yes. I want pictures to go through me.
Well, this one I explain. This is shows a historic erosion rate map that was put together by Department of Natural Resources Shoreline Erosion Control Division. And what it shows is three different shorelines, the red shoreline being 1942, the green shoreline being 1958, and the yellow shoreline being 1993, which is the important one to look at. The base aerial is 2008. What you'll note is on the northern shoreline, which would be at the top, is that we actually have lost shoreline, but there has been some accretion since 1993, or erosion. As you come around the point, there's been substantial erosion, and then substantial accretion as you come to the east side on it. This is actually lot 5 is on the east side, lot 4 is in the middle. I don't know if you can
define accretion, please.
Accumulation of sand.
Gotcha.
Have you been able to find the other picture, Kevin, or not?
The inverse of erosion.
And this is Protestant Point that it's showing.
So what is Protestant Point?
I don't know for a fact.
The joke I tell is I'm from Calvert County. We have Pagan Point.
You have Pagan Point?
We have Pagan Point. If you can't find it, that's okay.
What is it? What is that chart?
Yeah. So an issue here is this the larger picture? Is this one you're looking
yes.
for?
Yes.
Kevin, that's what the larger one looks like if you're flipping through. All right, so the question before us today is to be or not to be, to allow or not to allow
correct.
Somebody to lay down the riprap in order to keep the shoreline from... in order to protect their property. Is that the question?
Correct. What I'll continue with my presentation, case Kevin. What this project encompasses is two existing single-family home lots from a minor subdivision a number of years ago. The applicant has requested a license to construct a living shoreline and other structures at the two properties. And the elements of the project are for Lot 4, which is the interior lot, but does face on Breton Bay River, is to construct a 190-foot-long by 6-foot-wide timber pier, a platform, one boat lift, and mooring piles. The maximum channelward encroachment is 200 feet. It's also to plant marsh vegetation along 80 feet of the eroding shoreline and to construct 4 8-foot-wide by 35-foot-long sand containment structures along 714 feet of the shoreline, extending a maximum of 35-foot channelward. On Lot 5, which is the lot that has most of the interest and opposition on, is to construct a 270-foot-long by 3-foot-wide walkway over vegetated tidal wetlands and a tidal pond, and to construct a 240-foot-long and 6-foot-wide timber pier with a platform, a finger pier, and 6 mooring piles. That's a maximum of 226 feet channelward. It's also to plant marsh vegetation along 20 feet of the eroding shoreline and to construct 1 8-foot by 35-foot long sand containment groin extended a maximum of 35-foot channelward. Again, living shorelines are the preferred method of protecting one's shoreline. They are natural and provide both low and high marsh habitats. Environmental Article 16201C states that improvements to protect a person's property against erosion shall consist of non-structural shorelines, stabilization measures that preserve the natural environment, such as marsh creations. In summary, this proposed project will provide riparian access for 2 existing residential lots and over time result in the stabilization of approximately 714 feet of eroding shoreline out of the overall 1,100-plus feet of shoreline that encompasses these two properties. In the areas adjacent to each of the 5 groins or sand containment structures, a total of 100 square feet of marsh will be planted within 1 year as required by conditions of the tidal wetlands license. Over time, additional plantings will take place as the beach plan form is stabilized by accretion of sandy material. Because high marsh plants and sea stark are present on this site, it is expected that marsh vegetation will volunteer on its own in these stabilized areas on it. And this is the overall view that shows the Brown 5-lot subdivision to the left. It shows the Beckwith's properties being Lot 5 along the eastern shoreline of the cove, and then the other Breton Beach enter Lot 4. It also then gives you an overview of the lots to the east, the Slaby property, Munn's property, and Johnson's property. Were you able to find, got the other two? I should bring them up. This picture just kind of shows you an overall aerial view of the point. It shows the Beckwith's property down on Protestant Point and then Mrs. Slavy's and Mrs. Marsh's property, which is protected by the revetment. And then this, can you orient it? Or? And this final picture just shows you, this is the nearest property to the Beckwith's property, and it shows that the majority of their shoreline has been bulkheaded and revetted and is stabilized. And again, with that, we have Mr. and Mrs. Beckwith and staff from M&D to answer any of your questions, and Mr. Thomas Munns wishes to speak in opposition to granting of the license. And I thank you, and I'm available to answer any of your questions.
Can you go back to the larger map? So show me on the map, on the larger picture, Kevin, this one. So who's proposing to do what where?
If you notice, the Timothy and Kathy Beckwith, it's 21085 Breton Beach Court. That arrow down, that is Lot 4, and then Lot 5 is shown below that.
These are the two lots where they want to do something to the Redden shoreline.
Okay, so it's all around.
The neighbors live right here, which we saw there.
So is that all around the point, in essence?
It actually stops, in terms of the erosion control, stops just east of the point, and most of it is along the left-hand shoreline there.
Okay, so facing north.
Mm-hmm. Facing north, yes.
So it's the north shoreline, not so much the east shoreline.
No, the east shoreline is pretty well stabilized by natural processes. That's why the applicant has not proposed to do anything there.
All right. Okay, great.
Okay.
Do we want to hear from the property owners? Are they here?
Yes. Jim?
Come on down. All right, you don't have to. How about the property opponents, the people that are opposed? Come on down.
And I also have opened
the thing. Mr. Governor? Good morning. Mr. Comptroller, good morning.
Good morning.
Madam Treasurer, good morning. My name is Thomas Munns. With me is my wife, Dr. Jocelyn Munns, Louise Slaby, Ms. Jovan Marsh, and Ms. Cynthia Slaby. Now, can you have my first slide, please? Can you help me with that? That's not exactly. I do have the slides in order in these pamphlets. May I put
sure. Sure. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Okay. Is this what you gave Mr. Moore before?
This is what I actually brought the slides up.
Okay, I just want to make sure the record has
it. Okay. His application.
Let me start off my comments briefly by saying, Mr. Governor, we're not attorneys. We're not shoreline experts. We're lay people. But during this 19-month journey, we have spent countless hours trying to become educated and informed of the aspects of the applicant's proposed project on his property. I'd like to direct my comments immediately to the slides in front of you. Mr. Beckwith depicts his property on the application that sits before you as sort of a uniform type of land. May I have if you would please go to the next slide, or if you have that, please. That's okay. What I'd like to focus on is the actual Protestant point that is highlighted in front of you in the blue area, and that's where I will put my, I like to focus my comments on. That is the point of Protestant point, the area in blue. Next slide, please. This is very low-lying tidal wetlands. You will see in this particular slide right here, the very lightest blue that is depicted is an average elevation of 1 foot above sea level. As such, named storms, natural high tides inundate this property, and the land down there becomes obviously overrun with water. Certainly not every tree or shrub, but the land in general. I have personal knowledge of this. I live very close to this. I have tidal wetlands on my property. And when this happens, my entire front yard floods, which brings us to our issue. Per the applicant's process, in January of 2012, a public hearing was held in St. Mary's County where Mr. Beckwith had the opportunity to present his project to our neighbors and friends along Breton Beach and Breton Bay. At the conclusion of that meeting, we reached out to the subject matter experts, because we are not those. DNR, MDE, Army Corps of Engineers, Mr. Bruce Young, who's the St. Mary's Soil and County District Erosion Manager, and us, the Maryland Fisheries. I'm going to take this time, Mr. Governor, to thank DNR and MDE for all their hard work and support in this. Educate us. Take a look at this property. Take a look at what Mr. Beckwith is proposing and inform us and educate us as to the aspects of this. Many of these organizations walk the property, and they are on hard record of saying the shoreline is stable and no groins are required. Very important point. Further,
what was your second point?
Very important point. My second point is this. I'm sorry, sir.
You said there were two things. One was stable, and what was the second one?
That no groins that he is proposing are required to stabilize the shoreline. Secondly, and I really appreciate MDE's support in here, we are lay people. And MDE did a wonderful job of educating us that if Mr. Beckwith is allowed to place the groins in these shallow waters as he proposes, and if you can see from the black and white that it is, obviously storms are going to come. The water deposit on the other side of these groins will stay in place until those tides and storms go. While there, they will attract and grab the sand and sediment. And when that tide does go out and those waters do flow, that sediment, those sands, those soils will go with it. We believe that's detrimental to the tidal wetlands. As important to that is, we believe, where will those sands and sediment go? To our properties down the road. We may may irrevocably affect our beach property and our beachfront. The MDE has asked Mr. Beckwith, this effect that I've just described is known as scouring, a term I've never heard of, but I was educated by MDE. Mr. Beckwith was asked by MDE to address this point. He has not. Or there's no record that he has. Secondly, may I go to my fourth slide, please? Throughout this entire process, we've asked these questions. In the 19 months that we have done this, this next slide is the first and only piece of information that we have received from Mr. Beckwith that discusses shoreline erosion. And it is your fourth slide that I believe Golden Morelli placed on front of you.
It's in the package.
It's in the package. It's the fourth slide. That's the one. Thank you very much. This piece of information that describes Mr. Beckwith's shoreline erosion, the calculus for that, we received 1 week ago. We've had 1 week to review this. Trying to educate ourselves on what this was and how this calculus was obtained, we reached out to DNR, and particularly the Maryland Geological Society, Ms. Lamour Hennessy, and asked her to please educate us on this. Her results and her comments were that utilizing this type of photography is problematic in determining shoreline erosions, but more importantly than that, how does this mitigate or remove the agencies who came down and said shoreline is stable? Where's that calculus? And most importantly, because we believe this is the most important attribute to us, how does this address the scouring? Where do we see this? How is that addressed? We believe these are the two very important points that need to be addressed prior to this. Let me move to my second issue. And if I would, distinguished board members, if we could go back to Mr. Beckwith's original black and white slide. At the same public hearing in January 2012, Mr. Beckwith presented his property. As you can see, on the eastern side of his property is proposed a pier. At that public hearing, my wife and I suggested to Mr. Beckwith he strongly consider taking that pier and moving it to the northern portion of his property. And we had two reasons specifically. Our recommendations with our friends and neighbors on Breton Bay enthusiastically supported us. In this part of Maryland, the storms that come, particularly the name sorts of Sandy, Isabel, Irene, we all can name them. The most vicious weather, the most vicious waves come directly from the north. We believe that it was in Mr. Beckwith's and everyone's best interest to move that pier from 90 degrees impact of that to mitigate that to a more north-south structure. Secondly, the area that is proposed as we speak, the water in that area is very shallow, thus requiring him the size and scope to reach the deeper water so we can utilize watercraft, which would make sense. By and we'd also like to take this time to thank DNR for validating those measurements. By moving that pier 90 degrees, he reaches deeper water sooner. Third issue, as this pier exists out in front of you per his application, it is restrictive to Mrs. Slaby's property. This mitigates that. Final and fourth point, as we have learned throughout this educational process, the DNR and MD are very concerned about the shading caused by warping out, i.e., to try to minimize or mitigate an east-west morning to evening shading and aligning it to more of a north-south for environmental aspects. In spite of all those options, I will bring you one more point. The same agencies, the exact same agencies that requested that that indicated that Mr. Beckwith's shoreline was stable and did not need groins, recommended this option. Please look at this option. We've received nothing. And as we sit before you now for your judicious deliberation, the pier is where it is. What was the calculus? What options were looked at? Do you believe these are reasonable questions? Let me quickly summarize because I know your agenda items are busy. Mr. Beckwith has property rights, and we support those. We support his property rights. We want him to access Breton Bay. We believe, and everybody's seen this agreement on the board, we believe it's the most beautiful part of Maryland. But we have property rights, too. And we think it's very important. We have to get this right the first time. Because once this project is completed, it's going to outlive everybody in this room and our grandchildren. Our questions have been reasonable. These two questions I bring before you, we have asked from the very beginning. He has not provided a document, a discussion point, or a piece of information to alleviate our concerns. We think that's fair. Thank you very much for this opportunity. This is why we are here, to bring these important points to you for your judicious deliberation. We thank you for the opportunity. We thank you for your time. And most importantly, we thank you for the service to our state.
Thank you. I'm subject to your questions, please.
Mr. Controller?
No, I'm fine. Nobody ever thanks us for anything, so thank you.
I know the feeling.
Madam Treasurer?
Just as I understand, there were some changes made.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
But your concern is regardless of those changes, the jetties will cause some sort of a scouring.
Yes, ma'am.
On the shoreline on Ms. Slaby's.
And yes, ma'am. Down the, if you will, around the point to the south in front of. First stop, Mrs. Slaby's property, next ours, and then down the line.
Right, right.
And our question still remains is, how has that been addressed?
Yeah. No. I got that.
And, sir, your name is?
Thomas Munns. I'm the property down from Mrs. Slaby's.
I see you. Okay. Is there anything on your property?
We have a pier, and we do also have a revetment that we have placed to stop, due to the named storms. Our property sits probably about this high above Breton Bay and was caving in.
Global warming.
There's certainly any more.
Governor, if I could just ask you,
Comptroller.
And you're, the piers that are I see on the map here, there seem to be a half a dozen of them. Are they similar to Mr. Beckwith's pier?
Based on the measurements that he's proposed, his pier is 6 foot wide. I could say mine is probably 4.
Uh-huh.
And my pier goes out about 150 feet. The one on the eastern goes about 220. And I think that's more of an aspect, in my opinion, to reach the deeper water, because the water, in the cove, just to the right of our picture, to the east portion of Protestant Point, is very shallow. And at low tides, you can walk many feet, if not many yards, out into the sand. It's just the way, with all due respect, God made it.
But the piers that are out there already are in the 150-foot range.
Yes, sir, and perhaps you may be able to answer that. I don't want to predispose it to an incorrect answer.
Can I ask MDE to come back up?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Moore is here from your wetlands, but would you like Mr. Setzer from MDE?
Mr. Setzer's here.
Whoever.
Mr. Moore, why don't you come up?
Professional.
Why don't you introduce yourself for the record? Gary Setzer is with the Department of the Environment. Mr. Moore is a wetlands administrator for the Board of Public Works, so they work together on this recommendation.
Address the scouring concern, which, as I understand it, is that if you put, unlike the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 piers that are already there, if you put these 3 piers there, somehow it's going to collect sediment and it's all going to muck up on the beach south of it.
No, I see.
Is that the argument?
Okay.
The jetties.
Yeah, the open pile structures typically don't, you know, affect the littoral drift, the sand, currents, and so forth. However, on the groins, it's correct. They are there to trap sand. However, the formula that we use and historically have used is that when we look at a groin structure, we take the length of it. This is 35 feet, maximum channel or distance. And we take a ratio 2 times or 3 times that, so which would result in worst-case scenario on the last groin, number 5, on the point. It would potentially have an impact of 105 foot downstream, potentially. And that would only occur until that groin reaches equilibrium. In other words, it's filled either through the construction process or by Mother Nature. And then sand's going to start bypassing. But with that said, that still leaves over 200 foot of property on Mr. Beckwith's property in all. His structure is about 300 feet away on it. And the things I showed earlier is that with Ms. Slabby's property, it is hardened. It is revetted, bulkheaded and revetted. So even if this groin was placed closer, my analysis in years past when I was doing permits is that with that type of structure, there would be no scour because that shoreline is already hardened and stabilized.
So if there's a scouring effect, which is trapping the sand and putting more of it up on the beach, which we had to pay a lot of money to do in Ocean City, that would happen on Mr. Beckwith's property and not on the adjacent neighbor.
That would happen. And the other thing, too, that also is, again, this is a living shoreline, so there would be, you know, plantings included to once that beach, as I said, that beach platform stabilizes, either by man-made process filling or by natural process, those grasses are there as they are in your yard, you know, to hold the dirt, the sand in place. And that's what provides the storm protection.
Is that part of the proposal to replant those?
Yes. Yeah. As I said, too, is we believe that the seed stock is in the area. There's quite a bit of high marsh in those wetlands, that there will be voluntary planting. And Mr. Beckwith is a marine contractor in St. Mary's County. So, you know, he's familiar with these and does build these structures in his business.
Mm-hmm.
So he is required, whether they're volunteers or...
He's right now in the condition of the license.
Drafted.
He's conditioned to, right now within the immediate vicinity of each of the groins to plant 20 square feet and then to wait and see what Mother Nature does and then plant those. So he has to stay...
Mr. Munn's good point, which is that it looks like there will be a periodic inundation...
typically, if you walk his shoreline now, especially the northern shoreline where the structure is proposed, when the sand's on the beach, when a storm attacks, it washes it on up in landward, and it starts to form a natural dune. And if you come over on the east side, actually between the wetlands and the pond there, there is a slight dune area. There's the wetlands, a dune, the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Once those dunes get stabilized, as we do in Ocean City, they provide some degree of storm protection on it. And if this is sandy material, if it was silts and fines, I would agree with you. Once it gets suspended in the water column, it's going somewhere. But this is very sandy, and there's quite a bit of sand in the system.
There's also a monitoring requirement and an 85% coverage requirement that will go out and make sure that if you don't get the volunteer... of the plants, then he'll have to come back in and plant to make sure he gets that 85%.
And how is that inspected? How often and by whom?
Generally, it's a 5-year monitoring period, and it's reported once every year to give us an idea of how the plants are coming in. And then at the end of that monitoring period, we would make a decision as to whether or not he needs to go back in as a result of that inspection.
Mr. Controller.
Yes, Governor, I'm going to vote for this permit because not out of lack of sympathy for the opponents, because I know these are very emotional issues. They tend to mushroom. But there are existing docks, piers. You all seem to have some scientific basis for saying that it's okay. So I hope we can, without truncating, and hope we can move on. We have some items that are up in the $800 million area that we're going to be voting on. And but I say to the opponents, I'm not unsympathetic. I understand, I think, some of the, obviously the input you've had is enormous. And I'm sorry that there's a clash here. I guess I have some faith, I hope it's not misplaced, that Mr. Beckwith will do a nice job and that this will look good and be, you know, not a negative for the environment. And so I'm happy to vote for it whenever you want to call a vote, Governor.
Could I ask one more question, Governor? The question of the relocation of the pier from a sort of northeast...
I'm a little bit out of my element here, but anyway, as far as the location of the pier, originally there was the property had a difference in the boundary line between.
I don't mean to interrupt, but you just need to identify yourself.
I'm sorry. I'm Tim Beckwith. My wife Kathy's in the back row.
Thank
We're the owners of properties of lots 4 and 5 on Breton Bay. There are blue and red lines up there that are indicating the erosion and or the actual the property line. I don't see them very well. There's the red line, which is the current boundary line between lots 4 and 5. There's a blue line up there that I can barely see, but that was the previous boundary line between slots 4 and 5. The reason the boundary lines adjustments were done was to allow direct access to the sewage easement areas. Originally, the sewage easement area on lot 5 was almost landlocked. It would have required having to alter the wetlands in order to access the sewage easement area. So my first thing, what I did was I went to the county and the health department. I asked if they would be in agreement to allow me to do a boundary line adjustment between the two lots. And so doing so, giving direct access to the sewage easement area for each lot, so we were trading the sewage easement area. So the sewage easement area, which was originally landlocked on lot 5, now belongs to lot 4. The sewage easement area for lot 4 now goes to lot 5, and that gives direct access without any alteration to the wetland. And by doing that, we did a boundary line adjustment, which took the new boundary line to RIP, which is indicated in the red. That was the reason why when originally MDE had suggested that we relocate the pier to the northern side of the property, it wasn't an option because for us to have direct access to the sewage easement areas without disturbing the wetland, it wasn't an option to move it onto the other property because, of course, we all know there's only one pier per deeded lot. With that being said, that was the reason why the pier was never even considered. Everybody that Mr. Munns had mentioned, DNR, Soil Conservation, MDE, Tidal Wetlands, there's a long list of people. Everybody on that entire list, and I have in documentation, has promoted this idea, was in agreement with this idea, and reinforces the proposal for these structures. Everything was definitely without question in the best interest of the environment. There was one at one point they wanted me to, even though the pier on lot 5 was on the eastern direction, they wanted me to move it further north. Well, by moving it further north, created an area, it put it into an area closer to the sandbar. I'm trying to get to some navigable waters. That's the reason for the dogleg in there. We went to, it was a recommendation that we tried to avoid the tidal gut for the inlet as much as possible, so we moved the pier as far north as it was reasonable to yet still access the deeper water. The groins that were located closest to the slabby, there's only one groin that is located on lot 5 closest to the slabby property, and it is well over 200 feet away from their property, so there's no way that I've ever experienced that a 35-foot groin could influence a shoreline that far away.
So the groin is the...
as a sand containment system.
And that's the what's identified as a jetty on your black...
A jetty. It was originally proposed as a jetty. And during this process, over the 23 years that I've been in business, that I'd learned the difference between a joint and a groin and a jetty, and the difference between the two is the length, and that's 35 feet, which identifies a groin opposed to the jetty. And the groins go perpendicular to the shore. They do not go parallel to the shore. So the likelihood of trapping water behind them is nil. There's no way. The only thing it can do is acquire and hold sand as a containment system to allow the natural seed stock of the wetland grasses to expand. If they don't expand on their own, I've already, without question, agreed, and it's in the permit through MDE that I'll be required to plant them. I have no problem where we've planted many, many wetland plants as part of
the. And so I'm understanding the dog leg pier, that's something that would stand in the water, a pier. The water would flow under it. Right.
Yeah, it's a typical pier. Okay. Yeah, I've never seen a pier influence sand flow. Okay. Like the pile spacings are every 10 feet. The pilings are this big around. So
as far as the scouring concerns from the groin, that is from the one that's further up north at the edge of.
It would be the one that would be closest to the red line, which is only a few feet over to the property line on lot 5, which is the lot that adjoins the Slabby property.
Got you. I'm sorry, Madam Treasurer?
No, that was. Thank you.
Okay, forgive me. I've always had some recent throat surgery.
No, you're fine. Okay. Well, look, thank you all very much. Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I assume if there are any problems that develop, we're going to hear about them.
And how about, what item was that?
It was item 5.
All right. All right. So we have now approved item 5 and item 6. How about on the balance of the agenda? Secretary's agenda. Any questions? Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to DNR Real Property.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Emily Wilson with Department of Natural Resources. We have 8 items on our agenda today. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions.
Any questions? What's the most interesting one?
I would say it's probably the Mid-Maryland, Washington, Rural Legacy Area, the Morgan property. This is, it's within sight of the old Antietam Ironworks, which, of course, played a role during the Battle of Antietam. And it's also the likely site of a signal tower used by the Union troops at the close of the battle.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And what role did it play in the battle?
With the signal tower?
No, the ironworks and the signal tower.
The ironworks actually produced cannons for the Continental Army.
Uh-huh. Huh. For the Continental Army.
Mm-hmm. That's what the notes say.
For the Union Army.
This?
The Continental Army?
Yeah, that's what's in the notes.
Continental Army would be Washington's army. But it was also a site of a signal tower in the battle.
A likely site. It's not actually proven, but there's a lot of circumstantial evidence that suggests that that was there.
Mm-hmm. It provides space and buffer for the Maryland portion of the Appalachian National Scenic Trail. Okay. Treasurer moves all of the DNR real property items, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. Department of Budget Management.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are 18 items on the Department of Budget and Management's agenda for today. I'll be happy to answer any questions the members of the board may have.
Are there any that are interesting?
which is the most interesting?
Mr. Comptroller, any questions?
Thank you, Governor. Items, Madam Secretary, items 10S through item 16S.
Okay. I'm going to ask Ann Simmons, who is the director of the Employee Benefits Program, to come up. She's the resident expert on these items. But essentially, Mr. Comptroller, what we're doing with items 10 through 16 is we are extending the term of our health contracts for 6 months. It's applicable to the medical contract, the dental contract, the mental health, our flexible spending account, pharmacy, long-term care, and the group term and accidental death. And the purpose of this extension is just basically to allow us to change the plan year for our health contracts from being on a fiscal year basis and put in it on a calendar year basis. And we are making this change basically because this year's budget provides for us to participate in a program that's known as EGWP. It stands for Employer Group Waiver Plan. And under this plan, state retirees are going to be able to enroll in a hybrid Medicaid Part D program as well as a state drug plan. In this program, Medicaid Part D is going to be the primary payer. The state will be the secondary payer. And the reason, bottom line, why we're doing this is it does allow us to save $26 million annually. And in addition, it allows us to reduce our OPEB liability by $400 million. So that's the purpose for this.
$400 million. Every little bit helps.
You know, I'm probably going to vote against it. And I'd like to have a, I have no idea what all of the egg whip and everything else was just described, but we're spending $770 million with this group of items. And the question I have is, why aren't we competitively bidding that? And what is, I know we want to be cooperative with the federal government, and we'd like to, I guess, pursue grants and savings or whatever. I'm all for that. But what about competitive bidding for $769,677,000? I guess I can't see the 631 or something. That's a lot of money. And we're voting it today. And I just am mystified as to what the mandate is that is forcing us to move forward on contracts that expire in June of 2014. We have to extend it 6 months now, a year and a, almost a year and a half in advance. I mean, that just, anyway, I don't, I'm not going to fall on my sword here, but I support health care. I support all of the Obama program. I'm just incredulous that this amount of money would be put in front of us for a vote and without any competition.
Let me try to address that. First of all, we are going to be rebidding these contracts. We plan on issuing an RFP later this year. We will be rebidding them and reviewing the RFPs next year. The goal is to have a new contract start date of January of 2015. In terms of the $770 million that's reflected in these items, this represents 6 months of estimated employee and retiree claims for the short enrollment period. Our health benefits program is a $1.4 billion program. So, you know, this $770 million that you cited represents what the 6 month cost of this program is. I would just point out that we have, you know, talked with all the carriers. They are holding all of their current rates constant. No one is getting additional rate increases or additional monies for this carrier. And again, as I said, in order to participate in this program, one of the requirements that CMS has put forward is that the program needs to operate on a calendar year basis. What we're asking today is to be able to have a short enrollment period, which basically provides a bridge for us to get to January, to be able to participate in the program. And as I said, the goal here is we get to have $26 million annual of ongoing savings. And, of course, a big thing for us is reducing our OPEB liability.
Right. And so we have to convert all of our plan years from a fiscal plan year to a calendar year.
Why don't we just do that?
Well, that's what we're doing.
No, why don't we do it now as we speak and get all the parties involved? If it's a technical issue with the federal government wanting us to not be on a fiscal year but on a calendar year,
just get together and do it. The contract doesn't expire until June of 2014.
But if we cut that off now, we would be shortchanging the union's opportunity to negotiate the benefits that would go into the next contract. So we have to extend the current contract by 6 months in order to align the plan years, and that gives us more time this summer in order to hold the negotiations with the unions in order to prepare the RFP for release in this fall.
And as I said, we're trying to move to a calendar year. I think the IRS regulations that govern cafeteria plans, which is what we have, really require that we have an open enrollment period to be offered once every 12 months. We can't do it on 18 months. So essentially, we're putting them in a position where we have to have an open enrollment period for the start period, and then we will have one for the calendar year period that we will use going forward to participate in this EDWIC program and to realize those benefits.
That just doesn't make any sense to me. And it's a lot of money. Should be competitively bid. And I'll leave it at that. I'm happy to support health care and the unions and negotiations and all of this, but to vote $770 million without any competitive bidding is just something that on principle I'm against. It's wrong.
And how about and
because think of all the changes. Sorry, Governor. Think of all the changes we've been promised in health care. How many savings there are, how much innovation there is, how much we can manage and save all of this money, and I'm all for that.
But the only piece that's competitively bid is the admin fee, which represents less than 4% of that total. Claims are what claims are. They're based on the utilization of our employee population.
Well, that's an interesting thing that you brought that up. Because according to the most prestigious organizations in the country, 30% of the money we spend, of the $1.4 billion, is completely wasted. And that our employee, according not to me, go read the Institute of Medicine. So what are we, this is what I'm getting at here. We vote for these huge contracts saying they're just paying for services. And who's working on managing the expenditures of these dollars so that our people are healthier and we are saving money? Who's doing that?
Well, and that's part of what the Employee Benefits Division does, is that we have external auditors. We work closely with our carriers to monitor waste and fraud. And then when we go forward with the new RFPs, we fully intend to build in a value-based benefit design that is more focused on that, as well as the Integrative Wellness Initiative.
Yep, all those are good points, and we will be doing, and we have been working towards those things. We should probably also get Josh Sharfstein in here to do an update to the board on our mapping and the health IT. You know, for 6 years was one of our strategic goals. We have had the build-out of a common platform for healthcare services, the goal not being just to watch it on a map and wave at it, but to actually deploy the interventions further upstream so that we can dial up the prevention and the wellness. And actually, private sector is ahead of us on this one. I mean, ahead of all of us on this one in terms of what they demand. You look at Dow Chemical and some of the other folks and what they've been able to do. Having said that, I think I heard in your presentation, Madam Secretary, that there is a $26 million savings in this.
Yes.
And from what does that stem?
Well, that's over. Currently, we participate in the retiree drug subsidy program with Medicare. So they reimburse us 28% of our Medicare eligible retirees' drug costs between $320 and $6,500. And that gives us about $20 million a year. By switching to this EGWIP program, it actually doubles that savings, and so the net is the 26. But it also allows us to offset our OPEB liability, which under
that
the RDS.
That was my next question.
Under the RDS, we're not allowed.
Explain
to
explain offsets OPEB.
So the $26 million, well, because we're being subsidized by Medicare, so Medicare is paying those Part D those prescription drug premium claims first, and we're paying the difference to make
and, up. And OPEB is?
Is other post-employment.
It's retirees' expenses. Health benefits?
Right.
Retired state employees' health benefits.
Exactly. So it allows us to reduce the actuarial value of that liability because of the payment arrangement between Medicare and the state. For those
by $400 million.
Yes.
Well, that's good.
Indeed it is.
In our favor. Of course, we know how painful that was to go through the retirement reforms.
Before we did retirement reform, our liability was in excess of $16 billion. As a result of the steps that were taken by you and the members of the General Assembly adopting the proposal, we're now below 10. So, again,
it's more than
$400 million. So every little bit helps.
Well, $400 million is a big chunk of the. What would you say, $16 billion?
It was over $16 billion. It's now below 10.
In our drive to get back to 80, huh? Or is it 85?
That's the funded.
No, that's the funded.
That's the percentage of funding.
The liability for the cost of retired employees' health benefits because of the reforms went from at that time. At least $16 billion, down to
just
between
over eight. Yeah.
I was going to say about $9 billion.
Yeah. Okay.
That's
and this
a
knocks
lot
another
of money.
And this knocks another $400 million off of that $9 billion.
Yes. Right.
Well, that's good. We also I know that part of our supplemental considerations was an underutilization of what we had anticipated would be our the dollars we outlay for Medicaid. No. Yes. This year?
Mental health.
It was on the mental health side.
That was on the mental health side.
Okay. And I thought we had some favorable forecast. I could have sworn
it
we had some
favorable in all insurance.
Was that in the construction of the budget for this year that we had favorable Medicaid trends? In other words, that they were not going up like they had been. They were leveling off and saving us dollars?
And as we've gone through the year, we've continued to realize that the trends are better than what we were projecting.
Yeah, so some of the stuff, I'll be damned, some of the stuff actually worked.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And we need to do more of the things that work and less of the things that don't. All right, this makes sense to me. Mr. Comptroller?
Yes, no, and I appreciate the governor's measured response. I get a little antsy over here when we spend these large sums of money, as I say, without a real,
well, they're all good questions.
A real justification of my point of view. I'm reminded of my trip to Hagerstown a month or so ago, where I went out and promoted the governor's initiative of tax-free weekend, President's Day weekend. If you bought an energy-efficient washing machine or refrigerator, big appliance, and I went out to promote it, and I stood up and said, look, this is a great program. It's good for the consumer because they save the 6% sales tax. It's good for the stores because they have a lot of business. It's great for the environment because these are energy-efficient appliances. It's kind of bad for the state because we lose about $600,000 in sales tax revenue because of the three-day weekend. Well, the owner, Kurt Spiker, of family-owned business out there in Hagerstown, sent me an email. He said, well, you were right. We had a lot more traffic, six times the normal traffic. You're right, it was good for me because I sold every energy-efficient appliance in my store, which is good for the environment. But you're dead wrong as far as the sales tax loss. I estimated on a normal holiday weekend I would send you $2,300 in sales tax revenue. I'm enclosing a check for $7,000 because we had so many people in the store, they bought all these non-energy-efficient appliances that are not obviously ready for, they're like dishwashers and things that aren't energy efficient. So we had an enormous change. Would you please go and talk to your experts about the loss to the state? So I went back and asked my experts, and they said, yeah, we just took the number of energy efficient appliances that are sold at the state, multiplied them by 6%, and that's the loss. I said, well, what about the associated sales? And they said, you're asking us to tease out information that's too complicated. Well, this health care issue is something where we rely on all these great projections and expert analysis, et cetera. I take it these federal dollars that are coming into the state to make savings for us. So there's somebody who's paying those dollars. All I'm suggesting is that, you know, when we're talking about these huge sums of money, we need to be, well, much more careful as far as the presentation, the preparation, and it's not good enough just to say, oh, by the way, we're going to save a lot of money down the road because the feds are going to give us a whole lot of other taxpayers' money. And my bottom line issue here is with our state employees that they are not. Health care is broken in the sense that it's providing a lot of services that are redundant or actually hurt people. And for us to not address that with our own employees, where we can tell them they're going to be healthier, they're going to feel better and sleep better and look better and live longer, and they will be healthier. And we can save hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, not because the feds give us money, but because we're managing these programs in a much more business-like way, I guess.
We improve that every year, and we improve that with each new contract.
Yeah, but we never see it in the budget. We never see it in these figures. All you do is take the number of people and the average that the companies say, and you multiply it out, and that's you add 4% for administration, and that's where we end up. So I'm sorry. I'm a little frustrated.
Maybe we can get some more background about the savings that we've realized over the course of this year and what allows us to fund some of those deficiencies in the supplemental and the better, you know, bending down the cost curve on the Medicaid. The comptroller's right. We should have been doing this 40 years ago, and we should be doing it better than we have been. But having said that, I mean, the whole world's learning how to bring down what has been this bizarre American phenomenon of hyper-escalation of healthcare costs for lower quality of treatment, more disconnected, more specialized, and not contributing much to our quality or length of life. So, who we are and what we're doing right now in the United States. But the health IT platform allows us to do that, will allow us to do that in ways that technology was just never there to do before. The good things that companies like United have done with private sector employers, they're starting now to do for us, for all of our Medicaid recipients. But I think the point is well made. Since we are the behemoth healthcare purchaser in the borders of this state, that we can and we must be much more performance focus when it comes to these contracts, and that's going to take a big shift from what we've done in the past, but it's one that's already starting to bear some rewards and some returns. If we can, commensurate with this, to be able to dial up the earlier interventions for the diabetes, mm-hmm. to bring down the unnecessary hospital admissions from asthma, the congestive heart disease. If you look at sort of the bubble map of where the greatest costs come from, it's all our neighbors who suffer from those symptoms that we are not addressing in a more holistic and upstream way. That instead, with our love and trust and high technology and high specialization, we relegate to the line of high cost, and it's a at the expense oftentimes of their wellness and at everybody's checkbook. So let's do a briefing here, Peggy, or let's get Josh in to bring us up to date on where we are in terms of that big issue in a nutshell, which is bending down the healthcare costs by dialing up the wellness. Stated another way, when it comes to our, stated another way, or rather, Part D, how we're engaging in much smarter contracting for the huge amount of healthcare services that we purchase as a buyer. Okay. All right. Anything else on this from Mr. Comptroller?
No, thank you for those comments. My wife tells me I go overboard too easily. But these are important issues, and based on the governor's very measured comments, I will switch my vote and be in support. But
I've never persuaded you to vote for anything.
I didn't say I was going to buy you lunch, but that's okay.
All right.
But you understand, the governor articulated a lot of my concerns. And thank you very much for.
Thank you. Happy St. Patrick's Day. All right. Comptroller moves approval. Seconded by the treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to the balance of the Department of Budget and Management agenda items. Any other items? That one, by the way, was I should get better at calling these up front to clean up our record, huh? The one we were all talking about.
10 through 16.
10 through 16. Okay. Anything else on the Department of Budget Management? Comptroller moves approval. Seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to the Department of Information Technology. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Evans, University System of Maryland.
Good morning. Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have 9 items on the agenda today. We are withdrawing item 7C mod.
Okay. Any questions? Mr. Comptroller.
Yes. Item 6C.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I see that we're awarding a contract to Turner Construction for Towson University's new 4-year campus in Harford County. This is an exciting initiative both for the university and for the families of Harford counties, which due to BRAC and other natural economic patterns has emerged as one of our state's fastest growing jurisdictions. Congratulations. There's an obvious public demand for 4-year degree granting programs right in Harford County as well as Cecil County. For that matter, and this new facility will go a long way towards satisfying demand. Whether it's the commuting student who will save money on housing and gas by completing his or her coursework just a few miles up on the road, or an adult student who will now find it easier from a logistical situation to go to school while balancing work and family, people throughout Harford County will benefit from this newfound access to quality education. Employers will benefit from the highly trained and workforce-ready graduates. It's a sound investment of public resources. Definitely fits with everything that's going on in Harford County at the Heat Center, et cetera. Hats off to everyone who has been working on that program. But as happy as I am with this project, I have to say I'm deeply disturbed. In fact, I'll just say it straight out. I'm pretty disgusted by what Towson has done with recent events concerning their athletic teams. It's no surprise that I'm referring to the recent decision to disband both the men's baseball and soccer programs. I won't spend a lot of time going through the forensics on how that bizarre decision was made, if only to relieve the burden of some, I guess, bureaucrat sending me a letter that recites the company line, and I won't have to read that letter. I'll simply say I've had the privilege of being on the Towson campus on many, many occasions. It's an exceptional institution that's risen to national prominence thanks to the work of dedicated faculty and staff, boundless generosity of so many private donors. But I would hardly characterize the campus climate as austere based on the construction and good works. I don't think any sensible person truly believes there's a fiscal justification for eliminating these storied, successful baseball, soccer programs. But what was more troubling than the substance of the decision was the manner in which the administration chose to share the bad news with the student athletes whose lives have been disrupted. According to several news reports and first-hand accounts, which to my knowledge have not been contested by the administration, these athletes were given less than an hour to report to an emergency meeting. As a result, only a fraction of them were on hand to hear the news. Meeting, if you can call it that, only lasted a few minutes. No questions were accepted or answered.
The coaches were themselves being pink-slipped over in another room and therefore were not allowed to be in the room with their players and be a source of comfort, guidance, and perspective. And what is to be one of the most insulting gestures of disrespect that I've seen in my 27 years of public life, the president of the institution arrived at the meeting in the company of uniformed police officers, presumably as protection from acts of violent retaliation by the aggrieved players, as if they were a band of violent thugs and not dedicated, disciplined young men and women, represented their school proudly in NCAA competition, brought dedication to the Towson name by virtue of their contact. These are not big money, big revenue sports we're talking about. These kids are not going to see them on ESPN. I suspect none of them are going to get to the professional level. These are just kids who are out there playing for the love of the game in order to get their education, most important of all, to understand the importance of values such as loyalty, teamwork, and respect, none of which they received from the leadership of their own college. I think it's a severe black mark on the record of an otherwise exceptional university, one that frankly reflects poorly on the entire university system. If this awful decision is not reconsidered and reversed, I hope many, if not all, of these kids will go to play their chosen sport at another Maryland university that respects their talent and sacrifice. I hope the coaches who lose their jobs as a result of this will find other suitable opportunities. I hope that everyone who has a stake in Towson University's success will make it abundantly clear that they expect far better from a university of such stature and big league aspirations. Do I have my facts wrong?
I only know what I read in the paper also. I really can't speak to, you know, Towson's athletics program or what they did.
No.
Okay. I read the same thing. I heard the same thing the last week or week before last in the paper, and it was basically verbatim for what you just said. But I can't speak to what happens out on Towson as far as their athletic program.
To follow that one down like that, that is pretty outrageous.
I will take it back to
a parent, I'd be.
I will take it back to the system. When I go back, I will mention it to system.
Does Towson have anything on this agenda today?
Yes, sir.
Let's defer it to next week. The president can come down and tell us if that's how they really treated those kids.
Yes, sir.
What items?
I have withdrawn item 6C. The other one that I had was... Well, 7C, which is the Harvard Community College. 7C is the one I would prefer.
Thank you.
Controller moves to defer item 6, seconded by yours truly. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed.
I don't agree with it. I have no sympathy with what happened if what happened the way it did, but I don't know why this project should be denied. But hey.
Okay, Treasurer votes no on that one. Have the balance of the University System of Maryland agenda. I
just want to confirm that next meeting we're going to have the Frostburg State University press box at Bobcat Stadium. Is that going to be on the calendar?
It's my understanding that it will be on the April 3rd board's meeting.
Excellent. Thank you.
I mean, we're not a state that's been gutting and cannibalizing higher education through the recession.
On the contrary.
On the contrary. Okay. Anything else from the University System? No. Controlling this approval. Treasurer second. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. The ayes have it. Now we move on to the Department of Information Technology. Good catch, Peter. You might need to catch that.
Good afternoon, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, L.A. Schlanger, Department of IT. This afternoon we have but one item on the agenda, and I'll be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Any questions? Controller moves approval. Second by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. The ayes have it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Department of Transportation.
Good afternoon, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Acting Secretary Darrell Mobley presenting 15 items for MDOT. Items 1, 4, and 9 have been revised. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
There are no appeals filed in any of these.
No, ma'am.
Okay. Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. Department of General Services.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, DeAndrea Walker, Deputy Secretary for DGS. We have 26 items on the agenda. Be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions, Department of General Services? I don't think we have any. So Treasurer moves approval, seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. And that concludes our Board of Public Works agenda for the day. Thanks very much for your patience.